This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. I'm Martin Spriggs, and this is Wells Tech, episode 515, recorded on Tuesday, August 19th, 2017. And joining me as usual, Sally Draper from New Ulm, Minnesota. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I'm very good, Martin. Happy to be joining you. Happy to be meeting with you in this month of meetings on Wells Tech.
Our own little meeting, yes. How are things going for you over there?
Well, good. We actually took our lovely Mary D, our RV, out for another weekend excursion.
Oh, you did? Oh.
And had a nice time. This time we tried it with full hookups, so we were in the lap of luxury, just trying to figure out what all the different things do on this machine that we bought. So took a nice hot shower in there, and that was a pleasant experience, and it was tall enough for Kevin, so okay. I think we're on to something.
Good deal. Yeah. You have to keep us updated on your progress through that journey.
Adventure.
That's exciting. So where'd you go this time?
We went down to Jackson, Minnesota to a KOA campground down there. And then we circled back to a state campground as well and did some hiking and had a nice picnic lunch. So there's just so much out there to see that it's really cool to have the opportunity to do that.
So have you figured out how to tow the car yet, or are you just taking the
took the RV. Last time we actually followed with the car, but yeah, that's a whole nother learning curve that we got to tackle.
Yeah.
Most recently, we've been reading a lot about getting amazing internet in the RV and how much money that's going to cost us, but I think it can be done. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, we have a show to do. And as you mentioned, it has something to do with meetings. We've spent a couple weeks already talking about meetings. We were privileged last week to talk to Larry Schlomer, who probably sits in more meetings than the average bear. And he shared some of his tips and tricks. And we're going to be focusing on a certain aspect. We touched on it briefly last week, but strategic planning is the focus of week three meetings, and how you maybe bring people together to brainstorm and to figure out what lies ahead and the best way to attack it. And you brought in a guest into your studio there last week, didn't you?
That's right. We have an interview to play for our listeners and those watching video with Mr. Brian Fisher. Brian is a lay member of St. Paul's in New Ulm, and I've been privileged to be in a couple of different strategic planning type sessions with Brian as the facilitator, and was quite impressed with the techniques that he makes use of. So thought it'd be a good opportunity to share some ideas with our Wells Tech audience. So we should listen.
Without further ado, let's listen to our Brian Fisher interview.
I am happy to have today in the Wells Technology West office my friend Brian Fisher, who's a New Ulmer. He's the owner of Design Home Center here in New Ulm. He's also a leader in our congregation, St. Paul's in New Ulm. He serves as vice president and chairman of the elders there. So welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you here. Yep. It's an early morning interview with Brian, so he's got his A game on, I bet.
I've got my A game on, and again, I learned to get up early because a lot of stuff can get done right away in the morning.
There you go.
Yeah. We love morning people.
Yep.
That's right. Well, maybe you could spend just a minute and tell us a little bit about yourself, whatever.
Well, I am a New Ulmite, and I've been here. I'm 57 years old and worked in this community all this period. Been at Design Home Center for 30 years, and in the last couple of years, since the 90s, I've become a manager, and since then, I've become the owner, and finding out the responsibility of having 16 to 19 employees every day, there's a plan, and I am responsible for, seeing to it that these people are taken care of, and they got paychecks at the end of every week, too. The other thing is I've been involved with the church quite often, since the 80s. served on quite a few boards, but one of the treasured services that I did was working as a chairman of the congregation in 12 years ago. I did that for 6 years, and that's where I mentored after the pastors and other leaders in the church, and that's really what steered me on a good direction, you know, and I've carried that right into my workplace.
That's awesome.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, you mentioned that you are a business owner and you have responsibilities. That's a good way to think of it, of 16 to 19 people. You also have a responsibility to them to kind of have a healthy, growing business, which is good for everybody. And I'm assuming that that involves some thinking ahead and some strategic planning, right? What do you think about strategic planning and how important is it in your business?
Well, first of all, strategic planning, if I didn't have that, I probably wouldn't be sleeping at night.
Yeah.
There's things that, you know, we as a team, because we do work as a team and consensus, I want everybody involved. I want everybody to be on my bus and taking the same path. Every once in a while, we veer to the right, to the left, but, through discussion and through sales meetings, we tend to, get back on track. But it's just important for me because I find comfort in it and, I can sleep at night.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you've been a church officer for quite a while, and I've seen this strategic planning at work at St. Paul's in New Ulm, and also I've mentioned before on the podcast on the Treasure House board, we've been through this process. Mm-hmm. Why should a church or school be concerned about strategic planning? Different than a business or?
Well, when I'm doing strategic planning, I've got three questions in mind. You know, the first one is, and I typically work with whatever organization, and, it started with being church president, when you have a lot of things underneath your hat there, I wanted to make sure we had good direction. The first question was asked, how are we doing? And I think the second question we always ask is, where are we going? And the third one is, how do we get there? Those are, when I'm doing strategic planning, those are my three biggest questions. And then I develop a program underneath that. And each one is laid out to, specific organizations that I'm speaking to, as far as that's concerned. When we're doing this type of thing, it's always good to recap on what are the good things? Everybody can work on and tweak things better, but what are the good things? And stay away from the negative things and move forward.
Awesome.
So walk us through, Brian, the typical planning meeting, a strategic planning process, specifically in the church. What kind of setting are you trying to create? How many people are involved? Are there different roles? And what's kind of the overall methodology that you use?
Well, I'm going to step back away. I'm going to start with the business first.
Okay.
And because, with the business, it's a smaller group. And it works good with smaller groups, 11, 12 people. And in my business, I bring in the managers of departments and things like that. And there's a general question or what I like doing, and we've done this in the church as well. We do a brainstorming session. And, the brainstorming session, we go around the table, no discussion, one or two word answers, and everybody has the right to pass. And we do that in, three or four times around the table. The key thing is we set time limits. We just no horsing around. It's all business. And this way, we're not boring anybody, but in the meantime, everybody's attention is being focused right to the, the whiteboard or whatever else we're using to make notes. But, it's after this brainstorming session, and we'll have, quite a few issues, items, goods and bads on this list. And it's from there that we prioritize. And the whole objective here is not to work on 15 or 18 items, because that just doesn't happen. But we pick, three, four, whatever. As far as work is concerned, we'll pick out four priorities for the year, or three or four priorities for the year, because that's as much as we can get done in the course of the year, because we don't want to fail. But after we're doing this prioritization, which is done by every board member, I had generated a form that they get the vote by a number, and just by taking very the smallest anonymous. Number, yeah, taking the smallest number, and everybody gets to see how everybody voted. But in the meantime, at the end, oh, this has become priority number one. It's pretty, it gets well laid out, and we obviously pull out four priorities and lose the rest, and we work with the four.
How often do you do that? And is that like on-site, off-site?
We do it right on-site. Okay. Everything's done on-site. The brainstorming session, depending upon, again, what we're trying to achieve, you know, as far as objectives or what questions need to be answered, we'll spend a little time on each one, go around the board. The answers come out, you know, I've been doing this for many, many years. A lot of times it's the same answers. It's just that everybody needs to hear it again, and people need to say it. So they're being felt like they're, you know, they're important too.
You act as a, now you're in a leadership position, but in this particular setting, are you acting more as a facilitator, moderator, or how involved are you?
If we're doing, you know, this is the same method, you know, as far as when we do with the church, and I serve as a board of elders in the church, and I'm the chairman. So as an elder, we as a board on individual level, we come up with our prioritizing as well. And then we do our own ranking within our board, which gets carried to the council level. And being that I'm on council, we get the vote at that level by doing this marking system. So this is originally where it's all come from, you know, from the church side. And I basically have carried it into my work as well. And
interesting.
Yeah, it works. And now I've been actually doing a couple facilitating, because at work I would be doing it as a manager as well as a facilitator. But now I've been fortunate to help out the Treasure House, for instance, as a facilitator, and, you know, really enjoyed it. And I think, and again, that board itself was, I think, awakened by the 11 members that were there, which were all managers or some sort of a officer, because that's who was invited to the meeting. But I think they were awakened by the fact that out of 15 issues that we narrowed it down to, we actually came with four priorities. And okay, go ahead.
We did. I got to show the magic of the meeting, and maybe you can't see it, but we all voted anonymously, and then Brian tallied. So, you know, here we are with all these different views and really conflicting ideas about what was going to be at the top of the list or whatever. But when he tallied it all up, things just popped out. It was really amazing. And you could see how everyone voted and how, you know, one thing was just overwhelming. Everyone ranked it as number one, number two, right up there at the top of everyone's list. It was a neat experience. We heard everyone with the brainstorming, and we talked about what the issues were, and we kind of wrestled with them some, and then we voted, and boom, we were all behind it. It was a really neat.
Interesting. I'm curious how budgeting fits in here. Obviously, not all things are equal on that list when it comes to paying for it. Where does that fit in the strategic planning process?
Well, first of all, budgeting was an issue, you know, in this particular case, but, you know, now I'm going to bring it back to my workplace again, you know, as far as that's concerned, because we're always concerned about the budget too. You know, this process of the brainstorming, you know, people may think it's taken hours and hours to doing this, but really we narrowed down, you know, in any of these organizations that I've been messing around with, you know, we try to narrow that down in a matter of an hour, hour and a half time frame. Again, we've got time limits on everything. And I think that really keeps focus or people on focus, because when you're using volunteers or fellow workers or church members, people can, you know, maybe get carried away or get off target here. And it brings us back on the target you know. Yeah,
and I think some of the brainstorming brought out some of that budget stuff as well. Like we'd say, well, we really want to do this, but are we willing to, you know, sink all our budget for the year into this big project or whatever? We kind of threw those ideas out as we were.
What does this mean by selecting this?
Yeah. Right, exactly.
And a lot of times, you know, it's if it's the church, if it's work, or if it's Treasure House Board, or if it's another organization, budget seems to be an issue up front where people feel like they need to have, because everybody wants to be spending money. And obviously, if the money's not there, you know, now it gets prioritized who gets the money, you know, to spend if there is some there. Right. But the other thing is, it also looks at the other perspective is, where are we spending the money type thing too? You know, so in a lot of times budget does come to the top. But after you do this a while, because I've been doing this at Design Home Center for quite some time, the budget is something that we use every day, every year, and we update this every day, every year. And now it's a back burner thing for me. Now I can work on things like, how do we create positive cash flow, or how do we better our customer service type thing? Because I'm finding that's coming out more so than the budget line anymore, because the budget line's been taken care of. And in younger organizations, that should be up on top, because they need to know where the money is and how much money is coming in to be comfortable.
So yeah, we went through this whole process. We got our four priorities from voting and everything. And then at the end of the meeting that we held, at least, and probably pretty typical for your meetings with your business and church, was turning those priorities into action. So how do you, as a facilitator, then help us get to the next level where we turn that into action?
And that's right. You know, we can go through all this work, and yet if we don't have tactics, because we've got to come up with tactics now. And let's just say that, you know, at Design Home Center, it was the budget. Okay. And we needed to cut $40,000 out of the budget to make it happen. Okay. Now we have to come up with two or three tactics that are going to make that happen. And we do that as a team. We do that with everybody. I think back at the church days when Pastor Sutton, you know, we worked through these areas as well. And when we come up with the tactics, now we have a plan. And, you know, it may take 60 days, 90 days, it may take a year, but we have a plan. And along with the tactics, as I mentioned, we have to put a timeline on it. Because if we don't put a timeline on it, it just gets drawn out there and it'll come back to the table next year again. We may have failed, you know, but at least we had a timeline on it, and maybe the timeline wasn't justified, you know.
Basically, we didn't leave that meeting without this plan for moving forward with these four things, you know, throughout the year. And so now, as we have our monthly board meetings or subcommittee meetings or whatever, those are at the top of our list. That's what we decided as a group to be strategically.
Yeah. Now, again, as a church member, I guess whatever organization is, some of the things that I really get out of it when we walk away from these meetings is this. It's a whole leadership involvement. It's not just Brian Fisher, because I got more in stake in my ownership at Design Home Center that we have to do this. No, it's not because Treasure House, you know, I'm a friend of the board members that we have to do this. What happens is, after you walk away from this, everybody's talking. There's that energy shot of excitement coming through it, and it just boosts everybody's level of wanting to get something
like
done
buy-in.
And move forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A buy-in. I call it on the bus. You know, when I took over, it's like, who's on my bus and who's not on my bus. And this is where we're going. Sometimes I'm driving, sometimes you are, and, you know, don't feel like I'm the one that has to be the driver all the time. You know, it is a team effort here, and, you know, we work together, and we got to, you know, achieve things together.
Good stuff. good stuff. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Brian, for the early morning visit to our mm-hmm. technology office here. We appreciate your time. We know mm-hmm. you're a busy guy.
Yeah. Busy, sometimes.
Yeah. I'm sure our churches and schools will benefit from the ideas that you share.
Well, that's good. Awesome. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate it. Sally, thank you for bringing Brian on board and sharing some of his expertise. Anything that sticks in your head from what Brian said, and maybe your experiences with him in real life situations?
You know, Martin, I just walked away from it, you know, being thankful that he's used his gifts to help St. Paul's here in New Ulm, and that he was willing to share the ideas with our audience. I kind of felt in awe of the fact that I was sitting next to this kind of self-made man almost, who, you know, gives God the glory, obviously, for the gifts that he has, but who isn't a book author or anything and didn't turn to certain books or anything for his technique, but came about this process logically and prayerfully with the support of our congregation as he was tasked with that leadership role at St. Paul's, and has seen success with it. And I liked his three simple questions, you know, how are we doing, where are we going, and how do we get there? That's what it all boils down to. And I thought he had a really good technique for making that happen.
So what have your experience has been using this methodology with him kind of facilitating?
Yeah. Well, we mentioned in the interview that he worked with our Treasure House board. Treasure mm-hmm. House is the local resale shop. It benefits Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School here in New Ulm. And I have been on that board, I want to say, about 4 years now, and I'm currently in the chairman role of the board. And what I've observed there is that we're a very reactive board, that we spend a lot of time putting out fires or, you know, feeling under the gun to get things done because they need to be addressed or whatever. And so I was really hoping we would come into this planning session and just get clear direction and just, you know, start hammering away, have everything nailed down, know what we need to do to check off the list. And I think one thing that I came away with was we have so many directions we can go. And that's probably why we flounder a bit, because the list is long. Just like Brian said, we came up with a good 14 or 15 things that seem to be fairly high priority and, you know, paths that we could pursue. And taking the time to listen to one another and understand where the other person's coming from and explore some of the ideas a little bit more deeply than a cursory thought or whatever really enhanced all of our ability to kind of come to this conclusion of what direction we should go. And then he played that magic paper thing where we all voted and prioritized things, and he added it all up, and it was really clear how we wanted to proceed. So yeah, we have 15 things that we probably should be doing, but we don't have the resources to do that many. So we adopted 4, and we did some strategic planning around those, and we've already had subsequent meetings, and the wheels are turning. Those things are happening, and I'm just excited that we're actually proactive at this point, you know, guiding and giving direction to the Treasure House rather than waiting for the next fire to put out there.
Right. So I think we mentioned it in the interview, but it's probably worth discussing a little bit here. The question, how do you lead without directing? A lot of people that probably listen to this podcast, and you and I included, probably don't have a facilitator in many of our strategic planning sessions. We kind of lead, or will have to lead, that discussion. And I think it's a delicate balance, at least from my perspective, when to kind of let the ebb and the flow of the conversation and the participants kind of go. And then as a leader, trying to, in a little bit more strategic or positive direction, things can kind of spin out of control. But how do you find the balance when you're trying to do that, certainly at the Treasure House?
I think one thing that helps is that we have certain time frames assigned to our meetings. And mm-hmm. I believe Larry maybe talked about that last week as well. But we know we have a lot of things to cover, and we need to be you know, making decisions and moving forward on a lot of things. And so that kind of keeps the ball rolling. And if things do kind of go down a certain path, I can rein people back in with, well, let's see what I've heard is this, this, and this. We do need to keep moving. So can we, is there a motion that needs to be made or whatever, you know, just kind of reminding them of the timing and the fact that, we need to hear, we need to make decisions and move forward. That's probably my best, not really exciting, but best leadership or facilitation tip.
And one of the challenges also when we're thinking about churches and schools, I don't even think we mentioned this in the book, you have a mix. You have employees, staff, and you have volunteers. And it is very easy, I would think, for a volunteer to kind of diminish their role or their authority or their ability to come up with a great idea and kind of support it and push it and fight for it. When in the same room, you've got people who have to live with the decision, who are paid to be there and maybe are even trained in some of the things that you're talking about. I think that always has, you always have to keep that in mind and really encourage those congregational leaders slash volunteers to feel that they are an equal in the conversation and can have a big, big impact. In fact, those are the best projects where there's a team there, regardless of what your responsibilities are, what you're paid for, what you're not paid for.
I also think that you go a long way to building the team environment. If you model that as a facilitator, if you're willing to spend the time and listen to someone who may not have the credentials to garner a lot of respect in the meeting or whatever. I remember, my husband was on church council from a very young age. When I met him, he was only maybe 25 and he was on the council, but a very quiet man and, you know, not demonstrating or speaking out a whole lot or anything like that. But people, you know, respected it when he did speak and stuff. And that spoke well of the facilitator or the president of the congregation at that time and stuff.
So let's maybe wrap up our discussion here on meetings. We will have one more week, am I right, on meetings this month, and that will be educational focused. And, you know, goodness knows our educators have plenty of meetings, whether it be a faculty meeting, parent-teacher conferences, PTO meetings, the list goes on and on. So we will look forward to that next week to close out our month of meetings. So good stuff. So far, I really enjoyed talking to Larry and to Brian, getting interesting insights.
Definitely. And next week, we'll enjoy talking to Professor Rachel Feld, our semi-regular
classroom technology
correspondent. Boy, practice. How can I forget that. coming to us from Martin Luther College, and she's going to give us insight on all those different types of meetings for faculty.
Good. All right, let's move on. What's up in tech, news in tech?
Well, this week we read about an article about one of our favorite tools, a tool that helps us in a lot of ways, and it's called Trello. If you've listened to Wells Tech for any length of time, you know that we're Trello fans here in the Senate Technology Office, and it's our way of organizing our task around projects and things. Well, now there's a desktop software available for Trello. So
both
you don't have
Mac
to work it in your
and
browser.
For Windows, yep. So both platforms, and they're kind of billing it. And I've tried out the Windows version, and it essentially looks exactly the same. The difference is you get kind of built-in notifications, and don't necessarily have all the distractions that you might have with a bunch of tabs open and the challenge that sometimes will bring. So it's I wouldn't say it's a revolutionary addition, but I would say that I think would be handy for a lot of people to use the desktop version over the web version. But essentially, they work the same way. There are keyboard shortcuts that you can use, which is kind of nice to create cards, open cards, close cards, open the URL of a board or cards. If you do need to go to the web, you can do that. And as I mentioned, desktop notifications. So there's I'm sure they're going to be adding some stuff as we move along. But like you mentioned, this is a tool we kind of live in. Anybody working project work needs a tool. If it's not Trello, it's got to be something that you can count on. And one of the things I like about Trello also is their mobile apps on the iPad or phones. They have nice apps that work well there too. So I use that for personal purposes as well, for shopping lists and those kinds of things, and at-home projects. So it's kind of my go-to for all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, great tool. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the good stuff just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah, and for most people, I think they could get along with the free version, and the apps play nicely with the free version as well. So, mm-hmm. All right, speaking of news, Wells, now some Hurricane Irma updates are available.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, we've heard good news from our South Atlantic District following the hurricane. I read that many of our schools that had been without power and things were able to start school this week. And there's an update out on Wells.net that we can link to from South Atlantic District President Chuck Westra with specific reports from the different congregations in Florida. One of my favorite is from the congregation in Tallahassee, where Pastor Joel Russo serves. They had a house full of called workers from across the district who were there to escape the storm from further south in Florida. And he said his son was convinced that all the company came for his birthday party. So there you go. Quite a family they have down there in the South Atlantic District.
My sister and my mom both live in Florida, and they both came through fine. I say that because I didn't have to do it, but my sister did lose power for a week.
That's not warm.
Yep. So she was roughing it for about a week. They did have a friend bring over a generator for a little bit, but talked to her midweek, and she was trying to swat all the mosquitoes that had kind of made their way into the house. So it's, it's a challenge. It's a challenge. And there's going to be still a lot of cleanup down there. So anything that we can do to help the folks down there do that cleanup, I'm sure would be much appreciated.
Speaking of cleanup, obviously in South Texas as well, I have a niece in Houston, and she wrote, you know, just to have a little bit of rain and see things start to fill back up right away. Because even though, you know, things may have drained some, it's not all gone. And so it doesn't take much to put them back in flood type conditions. Mm-hmm. So continued need there. There are volunteer forms out on Wells.net on that same page where there's an update posted. So if you're interested in volunteering to work with Christian Aid and Relief on some of that cleanup effort, there's information there for you.
Yep. Very good. I think it's that time of the show where we do our picks of the week. And ladies first, as always. What have you got this week, Sally?
Well, mine is actually a follow-up to a pick I had a few weeks ago. You might remember me talking about Be Internet Awesome. It's a new fun way for children of all ages to explore interland and learn digital citizenship type lessons out there. But they don't just have things for kids. This week, Google posted about recently Google posted about bringing digital citizenship into the school curriculum. And in that regard, they've added a free online training course for teachers. It's called Digital Citizenship and Safety. And it probably would take maybe an hour and a half to go through the different sections. Why digital citizenship, teaching about internet safety and privacy, online safety on the go, savvy searching, stay safe from phishing and scams, and manage your online reputation. Each section is maybe about 15 minutes in length, and probably would be a great thing to do in a faculty meeting type setting, maybe with bringing everyone up to speed with how you can teach digital citizenship across the whole curriculum. So just a companion to having Interland and exploring that with students is to bring the teachers up to speed on digital citizenship as well. So there's a good resource for you.
Nice find. Yeah, good quality stuff, it looks like. So, all right. My pick of the week is a little piece of plastic. could be a number of pieces of plastic, I guess, but it is something from a company called Rhino Shield. And I use a couple of different phones. Right now I'm using an Android phone, but I have I switch back and forth for development purposes for the Wells mobile app. And I needed a case for my Samsung phone, and I did quite a bit of hunting around, and you can pay a lot of money for a case, but so I was looking for something that provides. So my sweet spot is fairly inexpensive, something that is very protective but also very thin. So I don't know if all three of those go together. I can probably get two of the three, but I think this is as close as I've found, because what they do is they make it, it's kind of a neat material. It's a kind of a hard plastic, but it's still got a little grip to it. So the one I got is a bumper, and that's kind of about the least protection you can provide, but it is rated at 11 feet. So you could drop your, I have a Galaxy phone, you could drop it from 11 feet, and it's just this little thing here. If you're watching at home, it's just a little bumper.
I'm not
bumper.
Seeing your screen share, or your video is kind of frozen for me. I'm not sure.
I'm seeing it. So hopefully it'll come through in the video. Let me see if I can just make sure it goes full screen there. But basically it's a plastic bumper, and $25, and they sell screen protectors, and they have skins for the back and so on and so forth for almost any phone out there. They have all the models here and all the configurations, and I've been really happy with it because it's fairly inexpensive. It doesn't add a lot of bulk to the phone. And it provides, I've never had actually a case that I could, that was rated from that height, which is really cool. And from what I've read online, it's really the, it's a real deal. So they have other stuff on this site, on the Rhino Shield site. It's rhinoshield.io. They have modifications. They have lenses you can add onto your smartphone phone camera, and like I mentioned, all the models as well. So bumpers, other kinds of full cases they have, and just a lot of selection here. So I'm a believer, and when I have to buy another case, I'm going to look here first, because I think there's just some good buys here at, and good quality, at least from my perspective so far.
Excellent.
All right, let's move on to community feedback. And I guess I'm still up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Let me do another screen share here for those of you watching. We realize that most of you aren't watching, so we try and be sensitive to that. But for those of you that do, we want to give you at least something to look at. This is a tweet I retweeted, actually a blog post from Free Technology for Teachers. And I got to give credit to my wife, Debbie. She is always on a hunt to try and find something I haven't heard of. And she was really ecstatic when I told her yesterday that I had not seen some of these tools. Basically, on the Free Technology for Teachers blog, 6 ways to create screencasts on Chromebooks. So I'm keeping my screencast comments string alive. I think I've mentioned screencasting stuff for like 4 weeks in a row. But this one is specifically for Chromebook. So this would probably be great in the hands of students that you're asking to do screencasts of one sort or another. And many of these I hadn't heard of. Loom, Soapbox, View Edit, Nimbus Screenshot, CaptureCast. And the only one I'd actually heard of is Screencastify, which is the last one. But he goes into a little bit of a detail, obviously links to each one of them, but all of these are free. There some of them have premium versions if you're storing content and such. But that had been a challenge for a long time. How do you do screencasting when you're on a Chromebook, because you don't have all the luxuries of hard disk space and, you know, some of the things that you have to kind of limit yourself to the browser. So this rather recent article is published Sunday, September 10th. Six ways to create screencasts on Chromebooks might be a great resource for those that want to do that, or teachers who are using Chromebooks that need to do flip classroom kinds of things, etc. So take a look at that article on free technology for teachers.
Excellent. We did talk about Soapbox, but I know it's brand new. It was just last week, and we, I think it was maybe Kirk Gosdick.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. Yep.
So I tried it out, and it was nice to be able to switch from your webcam to your screen. That's one of the features of Soapbox. So, and interestingly, I have some community feedback to share from the Wells Google Schools group. So let's see if I can share my screen. And one thing that someone asked is, what's the best way to record video on a Chromebook? So your article answers Allison O's question over on Wells Google Schools. You should put that out there if someone hasn't yet. Anyway, I was going to focus on a couple of other articles that are posted here. One from Professor James Karlofsky. It was from the G Suite Tips blog, and there's an article out there on making your paragraphs pop with borders and shading. So basically, you can highlight a paragraph of text and go into paragraph format, and you can set up borders and shading. There's a little short 4-minute video that kind of walks you through the process and allows you to do a little bit more with your Google Docs in terms of formatting. So check that out if that's something that would be of use to you. I also wanted to point out a post from Rachel Feld. She was looking for Gmail tips, and this just kind of speaks to the usefulness of this Wells Google Schools group. She got 11 responses, or maybe 10, and her thank you at the end. But lots of little tips. People talked about using filters, about reminders, different plugins they use, like Write-in-Box, and someone mentioned another one further down in the conversation. But the one that I really didn't know about came from James Karlofsky again. So James, you win the prize. I talked about you twice on Wells Tech this week. And he said, as you're addressing an email to multiple email addresses, so say I was addressing something to Martin Spriggs at wells.net and to Sally Draper at wells.net, I can actually click on the word to in my email and, whoops, let me make it big again. Sorry. That is not what I want to do. This is what I want. If I click on the word to, it should open up the contacts. And down at the bottom of the contact screen, I have an option to save as a group. So I could call it Wells Tech and save it. And then I have that group in my contacts list. So say you're writing to 10 people that you know you're going to write to on a regular basis or whatever, it'd be nice if you could just type in the group name instead of their individual email addresses each time. So if you add a group to your contacts list, it's that simple. It propagates the address line with all the different email addresses of the people in that group. So I thought that was a great tip. Martin, were you aware of clicking on two to do that?
Nope.
Yeah, so James, you taught us both something. How about that? Good tips. And there's lots more in the list. If you want to head over to the Wells Google Schools group, we'll have a link in the show notes to join the group on Google Plus if you aren't part of that community.
All right, neat. So let's go on to our focus on ministry resources.
And I think I'm up this week.
You are.
I was going to talk a little bit about being social. And this comes actually from an ebook that I read recently from the Church Mag website called The Social Christian. Now, full disclaimer, we may not be on the same page on all aspects of theology with the writer of the ebook, but I do think there are things to learn and consider from the ebook. And after reading it, I was I kind of came up with my own list of five ways to let your light shine online. And so that's our ministry resource for this week. And I talk about things like number one on the list, being in the Word. So it's kind of hard to let your light shine online if you're not in God's Word and dwelling on it and letting it fill your heart with joy in the salvation through Jesus Christ. And so one question I ask is, what would our postings be like if we spent the same amount of time in the Word as we currently spend posting things on social media? It would definitely, I think, add more to our ability to have that conversation in a God-pleasing and uplifting way. So definitely want to be in the Word. Good advice, no matter what part of your life you're talking about. I also have down here to decrease yourself and increase God in things that you write online. It's just an easy thing, a trap to fall into, to show your best out in the world of social media. And instead, it's better to show Christ's best and, you know, keep it real and let folks know that you rely on Christ for the good and the bad, that he's that high in your life rather than putting yourself up on a pedestal or whatever. I also mentioned lifting others up and sharing wisely and a couple of tips around that. And I ended with the fact that we want to give God the glory in all things, including in our social media posts. And one thing that I enjoy doing is doing that with hashtags. I call them hashtags for him, where I just look for a clever way to say in a hashtag what I want people to take away from something that I'm posting. And I ended the article with hashtag salvation through Jesus is what matters most. And just having people focus on those strangely formatted, pushed together words, gives them a little bit of a challenge and maybe makes them think a little bit more about the message you're trying to convey. So that's my ministry resource for the week, five ways to let your light shine online.
So good stuff, Sally. Thank you for writing that. Wonderful stuff. In fact, just thinking about hashtags, that's something that I'm really challenged by. I don't know if that's a gift or if you can practice it. I see, all these social media folks and even my own kids, hashtag up the place, and I have no idea where these are coming from. They're kind of cute and inventive and creative, but at the end of the day, I just struggle creating hashtags. I think of myself as a decent writer, but not in the hashtag world.
Again, I just try to think of what it is I want people to take away, mm-hmm. or what underlying message I'm trying to convey or I'd like them to get from what I've written. And oftentimes my hashtags are just blessed or child mm-hmm. of God or
right.
or whatever. And that's fine. I think it's just something that sums up your heart in the moment and obviously shares your faith in the process.
That's a great definition. It's almost like a one-word summary.
Mm-hmm. A one combined word summary.
Right, exactly.
Pushed together.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's a good way to think of it. I think that'll help me. So good. All right. Thank you for that ministry resource. We'll be back next week with mine, whatever that might be. Still
can't wait.
Still trying to figure that out.
Good.
We do have a featured video this week, don't we, Sally?
We do, and it's from our friends at Koine, a brand new video in their Friday video series, Brothers, Sisters, Let Us Gladly, one of my favorite hymns. And now you can get it in a format where you can sing along with them because all the words are on the screen as they sing. So listen up and enjoy.
Very nice. That's going to about do it this week. Good show. And we're going to try and do it again next week, as you mentioned, with Professor Rachel Feld and talking about, again, meetings and getting her perspective on the good, the bad, and things that we can do to make more good than bad. So tune in next week for that education-focused conversation on meetings. Thank you all for joining us. Really appreciate you tuning in. Even if it's not every week, every few weeks, whenever you get the time, we love to have you tune in and bring your friends and contribute if you like. There are lots of ways to do that. Just go to the show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Send an email, wellstech@wells.net. And we're on all the social media locations. You can hashtag Wells Tech almost anywhere and it'll make its way to us. So we'd be happy if you joined us. Sally, I think that's going to about do it. Thank you for all your work, and we'll see all of you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.